word of welcome to the Secretary General and the Office of Chief Justice, Sejo Sengwe, and a team from the Office of the Chief Justice. This is our second engagement since establishing the office. As you know, the Office of the Chief Justice was proclaimed as a department in 2010. And but that didn't mean that the office was up and running. It's been a process whereby the office was staffed, and so that whole process is spearheaded by Chief Justice Mokoena Mokoena. And the whole purpose behind it is to entrench the independence of the judiciary, so that all court matters, all judicial matters, are handled by the judiciary themselves, as opposed to being dealt with by politicians. And so we are privileged and pleased to have you before us, man. And we have received a electronic copy of your presentation. But notwithstanding that, we're looking forward to hearing you address us.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. And maybe for the purpose of introductions, Chairperson, may I be guided? Would the Chairperson like us to introduce ourselves? Okay, before I start with the presentation.
If you can introduce everyone, or if they can...
Individually introduce them. Thanks, Chairperson. I'll start with Dr. Mushu on my left. Dr. Mushu.
Khumulimo Mushu, I'm the CEO of the South African Judicial Education Institute.
Good morning.
And I'm Mr. Joseph, I'm the Secretary General Office of the Chief Justice.
Good morning. I'm Kathy Kutzer. I'm the Chief Financial Officer in the Office of the Chief Justice.
Good morning, Mervin Torolingo. I'm the Head of Court Services.
Good morning, I'm Thabo Mekwa, Head Human Resource.
Good morning, my name is Itumele Malau. I'm the Director for Strategy, Monitoring and Evaluation.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Lula Maluti, and I'm the Director of Media Relations.
Thank you, Chairperson, and we really appreciate the committee having asked us to come and do the briefing. And I will proceed straight to the presentation. The outline of the presentation, Chairperson, will deal with the introduction, then we go to the status of the OCJ, its mandates, the budget for 13-14 financial year, as well as 14-15, which will include the MTech as we move forward. The staffing issues, which are very critical for capacitating the OCJ, the OCJ priorities, the new requests, as well as the concluding remarks. From an introduction point of view, we included this information just for purposes of completeness. We have covered that in the previous engagement, Chairperson, with you. The Office of Chief Justice was proclaimed 23rd August 2010, and maybe to pause and reflect that incidentally the 23rd of August is now 3 years, and the 23rd of August is the date when the President put into operation the two pieces of legislation, the Superior Courts Act as well as the Constitution 17th Amendment Bill. Then the two acts obviously entrenches the Chief Justice's dual role as Head of Judiciary and the Constitutional Court. And the Memorandum of Understanding that was signed between the OCJ and the DOJ with regard to some of the functions that were transferred, in addition to those that were determined by the Minister of DPSA in 2010, still stands. However, we still have the other functions which were mentioned, the Ministries Commission Secretariat and the Rules Board functions still within the Department of Justice as the matter stands now. National Treasury has approved the budget program structure of the Office of the Chief Justice, honorable members, in April. And in the last briefing, we have indicated that the Supreme Court of Appeal, the SCA, was by error not included. It has been formalized. It has been included in the budget program structure. What is now we are busy with is the preparations with regard to the budget vote. We will deal with that in the next slide as we move along. In September this year, myself and the DG of Justice, we have engaged with National Treasury, and the three departments are in ad idem with regard to the preparedness as well as the transfer in principle, although the details still have to be worked out. And we are looking at the prescribed requirements for compliance. This slide, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is merely just to indicate the fact that Section 5 of the Money Bill Act is still not applicable to the OCJ as a method, technically speaking, purely because we still a sub-program of justice. And therefore, we account in terms of that. The DG still remains the accounting officer. With regard to the mandates, as I've already alluded to, in addition, Chairperson and members, honourable members, to the two pieces of legislation, I will not repeat because I think this House and this committee has dealt extensively with these two pieces of legislation, which empowers the Chief Justice to really begin to take responsibility over the judicial functions of all courts and monitor the implementation of the norms and standards after they are established. And provide, develop guidelines and protocols. We highlight these three aspects because they also have implications for the capacity of the OCJ to deliver and to support the Chief Justice. And also the fact that the Constitutional Court, as the apex court, has now been reaffirmed. With regard to SAJAY Act, as well as the JSC, the mandate still stands. The Judicial Service Commission, what one could highlight is the fact that the regulations with regard to the registrable interest has been finalized. And honorable members, the Chief Justice has already approached the Minister with regard to the assignment or designation of the registrar for registrable interest. Moving to the budget, 2013 budget expenditure report as at 30 September, which is mid-year. Our budget for that was allocated to us was 123.9 million, and we are standing at 45.8 as we stand, and the variance obviously is 78. The CFO will go into the details on the numbers as we move along. The mid-year expenditure, if you look at the first column, sorry, the second column, honourable members, the 61.9 is when we take the 123.9 and divide into two mid-year. So the 45.8 million against the 61 give us a 26% variance. And we will be explaining the variance here. The 16.1 million, which is a 26%. The 3.3 on compensation of employees is really relating to the posts which are in the process of being filled and which we intend to finalize the process within the next month. 5 SMS posts as well as 8 administrative posts. 12.8 million goods and services, mainly as a result of the IT infrastructure project, which has already been initiated and was scheduled to start in the second quarter of the financial year, but we had to deal with other compliance issues. 4.5 million is commitment on the Concord Library Services. The approved budget program structure, I've already alluded to that. We have three programs, one administration, second program is judicial support and court administration, now inclusive of all superior courts. Program 3, Judicial Education and Research, and according to the budget program structure as approved by National Treasury, we will also take charge of the judge's salary administration as a direct charge from the National Revenue Fund. In terms of preparation for the budget vote, as per the National Treasury checklist. We have two slides, Honourable Member, that will outline the checklist requirements that National Treasury will be looking at. The first is the strategic plan and the APP. We have already submitted our first draft to National Treasury via the DOJ. As the members would know, we are part of Justice. And I know that, Chairperson members, the strategic plan was highlighted in the last briefing in May. We do have the draft plan with us. It is there if it's requested, the Chairperson members will indicate, but it is already in the process of being looked at. The other issue is the approval of the budget structure is already completed. Opening of the relevant accounts, the PLC account, deposit account, interdepartmental account, the petty cash account and charges account have already been completed. Installation of the IT infrastructure, the contractor has been approved and implementation is to commence in November. Creation of the transversal systems, UBAS, Versal, and Logis. It is we have written approval to obtain that, and CETA is on board to make sure that we are compliant with regard to that. The warrant vouchers, the CFO will go into detail on that. It will be done as soon as we have the number for the budget vote. The department must be registered with SARS, Regional Service Council, Compensation Fund, Pension Fund, and Medical Fund. The SARS part is completed. The others is submitted already in November. Will be submitted in November, sorry. The compensation fund is subject to separation from the DOJ. For as long as there is no separation, then we'll still be part of Justice in that respect. Pension fund medical aid completed. Appointment of the CFO, we've already done that. As you would know, on our members, there was an issue raised in the last meeting in May with this aspect. Appointment of a system controller completed, and the audit and risk committee, we already have made the call for nominations. We have already identified the relevant persons to serve, and we are just waiting for the right moment when the budget vote process is nearing so that we can finalize that process. So from our side, we are prepared. 2014-15, so 14 to 17 MPS budget. The 13-14 members, honorable members, it excludes the High Court, and from 14-15 to 17 is inclusive of the Superior Court on the basis that we're working on the basis that the High Court will be transferred to the Office of the Chief Justice. So these are the numbers with regard to the inclusive of the money that will be coming from the Department of Justice as part of the transfer, which we are working with together. You will recall in our previous discussion in May, on our members, we mentioned with Dr. Duvier that about 1.3 billion may be transferred to the High Court as they come over. With regard to staffing, we have adjusted the slides from the one that was sent yesterday and corrected that. We have 222 posts, 134 filled and 78 vacant. At SMS level, 17 filled, 10 vacant. At below level 13, is 117 filled and 78 are vacant, and 195 and 27 give us 222. With regards to staffing, we will indicate, Chairperson and honourable members, that one of the challenges that we are faced with the filling of posts is twofold. One is the budget, the other is also the office space. We don't necessarily have sufficient office space because it's one thing to fast track the filling of posts, but at the same time, you need to have sufficient office space for people to occupy. The priorities of the OCJ, judiciary-led court administration model. The judiciary court-led court administration model process has taken another level, sorry. In the first week of October, the Chief Justice did present the Minister with the first draft, reviewed draft of the model itself, and the Department and the Minister is considering that. It was submitted on the 6th of October. securing of the OCJ budget vote, I have already alluded to that in the previous slide. And we are maybe to pause and indicate that the Treasury has indicated and formalized that they will be prepared to grant the OCJ the budget vote by the 1st of April 2014, but obviously subject to us complying with the requirements. Judicial education, e-learning and soft skills training, which Dr. Musoe will talk to. The IT infrastructure, we have already indicated that in November we'll be starting to implement in the Edura House, where we are housed. The judicial headquarters, which is the home for the judiciary, remains a challenge. As I've indicated, it's also hampering most of the capacitation aspects relating to filling of staff, etc. We are in liaison with the DPW. We have established that relationship where we are looking at options for the appropriate accommodation for the Office of the Chief Justice. Capacitation of the OCJ to carry the current mandate. The mandate as were in its threefold. One, as determined in 2010 by the DPSA. Two, that comes from the two statutes that came into operation in August. And three, also the coming functions from the High Court transfer. Judicial case flow management still continues. The work is continuing, and my colleague Bevan can add to that. Court modernization, e-filing and e-record management. The intention is that Chief Justice actually is very strong when it comes to court modernization issues, because as he is given the responsibility for the judicial functions of court, his argument is that he has to account, rightly so, for the performance of the court, and therefore some of these functions which are very close to that needs to be efficient. And therefore, we need to, from an access to justice point of view, look at our systems. Communication and outreach program is one aspect which is our priority, and we are trying to expand on that so that we also increase the profile of the judiciary as the branch of state. We only have one position as matters stand with the media relations, and therefore we need to capacity to expand on that service. Implementation of legislation I've already touched on. I will not repeat on those aspects, except to highlight the issue relating to norms and standards, which honorable members know that the Chief Justice is enjoined by the two statutes to develop the norms and standards for the function of the court, for all courts, meaning the superior and the lower court. The next slide just seeks to zoom on the financial aspects relating to the priorities. When it comes to the headquarters of the judiciary, of the OCJ, we are estimating that 150 million for about 500 staff member complements. We are not planning on the basis of where we are now, but for the future, will be sufficient to start from. Communication services, we have to do our branding as a department. As the honorable member might know, it becomes sometimes very unfair, like when you have to interview people and they need to know where the Office of the Chief Justice information is. We're relying on the domain of the Justice Department because we are still part of that. But we need to make sure that we also improve our stakeholder relations and our outreach so that people know about the Office of the Chief Justice, what it does and what it stands for, and they are able to also engage with us. Judicial case flow management, 15 million. We have this on the baseline from the Department of Justice, which we are working together with, quite frankly. And we try to make sure that we provide for both the lower cost and superior cost from this baseline. Capacitation of the OCJ to carry the new mandates in terms of human capacity and the systems, we request 15 million. Court modernization, we estimated 18 million, and judicial education, 16 million to do e-learning for facilities, for training programs for magistrates, as well as to include a soft skilling program for judicial officials. All these projects, Chairperson and honorable members, are not funded as we speak, so we seek to get support of the committee to get this. Our engagement with National Treasury and the DOJ on the budget shortfall, we just want to highlight that when the budget was allocated to the OCJ in 2014, it was really an inflation-based on what has been given in the previous year. The budget didn't necessarily consider the year-by-year growth in terms of the mandates as well as the resources that will be required by the OCJ to perform its mandate. However, we have engaged the National Treasury in the last MTEF process, and quite correctly they have raised the economic climate that we are in, the budget constraint, and their view was that the reprioritization must happen within the department from their baseline to find the shortfalls in the new mandate. And they have advised me that the OCJ must finalize first with the DOJ the transfer of the functions which would come with the resources before any additional budget can be considered. I must mention, Chairperson and Honourable Members, that we have been good support from National Treasury as well as the DPSA with regard to budget from National Treasury as well as DPSA with regard to assisting us with technical support to manage the transfer, because we don't have money to be able to get external services to do the transfer. So what we are doing with DPSA and National Treasury, they have pledged their support and they are going with us to support us to manage the transfer. And mainly the DPSA, because they have in this current administration created new departments, with departments, and they have that technical support with them. The budget shortfall, 2013-14, 66.4 million is estimated, and this has already been indicated in the previous slide. I want to highlight the rental of the OCJ offices and furniture, the 17.7 for the current year. And as I've indicated, Chairperson and members, it hampers the growth of the department because currently we are sitting in a Jura house, which was initially identified for the institute, for the South African Judicial Education Institute. We are occupying three floors there, and SAJE grows and the OCJ together grows, so it becomes a challenge in that sense. In conclusion, the Chairperson and Honourable Members, we'd like to thank the Portfolio Committee for your guidance and support to ensure that we are better positioned to deliver on our mandate. And I will ask my colleagues, Dr. Mushiu and other members, to also speak to those aspects that I might not have gone into the details, or those aspects that they need to highlight. So from our side, Chairperson, we will be greatly honored if the committee can assist us to really make sure that the capacity we need within the constraints that are available, of course, can be made available for us to especially with regard to the mandates that flow from the two acts that came into operation in August. Thank you. I'll ask Dr. Mushiu too.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think as far as the institute is concerned, I can just quickly talk about to give the committee members assurance that in terms of governance, in terms of the act, that everything is in place, and also as far as training is concerned, from July to September, we trained about 506 judicial officers, that is including both judges and magistrates, as well as one program of what we call advanced aspirant judges training. I have to mention to the members that we are unable to have an increased number of training program, largely because we do not have adequate money. The budget of SAJE is about 23 million. 18 million, that is what we have for goods and services, and the remainder for staffing. And we have then, the council has then divided that among the three levels of the judiciary. We have a lot of strain in terms of the appointment of magistrates. When we plan at the beginning of financial year, we would be given an idea that there will be new appointments, but we wouldn't know how many and when. And as a matter of fact, just last week I was informed that about 27 regional court magistrates were appointed. We also been informed that 46 of them that we are making an arrangement for training, which is the honourable members, which is a month long training, which is extremely expensive because we don't even have the facility where to train them, and therefore we rely on hotels. That's another one strain on our budget. Just in terms of that 506 judicial officers that are trained, in the previous meeting when we were here, there was a question relating to fire. I need to mention to the honourable members that we have trained today 58 magistrates. We had the first session was for 28 magistrates, those that were not trained before. And also what we did, we organised what we call fire refresher for those that were trained as far back as 2004, but there was no designation of this magistrate. So we are now working on the designation. The other area of training has been on children's judgment writing, maintenance, computer literacy at base, both basic and advanced. The Department of Justice has been rolling out laptops to the magistrates across the country. And we are working very closely with the department. We wanted to make sure that when they receive the laptops, at least they have an idea to how to navigate and use that. And our training of computer literacy is coupled with training them on how to use virtual library services. The members will be aware that the department has got a contract with LexisNexis and Tutor, which will provide those services. And we have, Saji has partnered with them when we do the training, provide them with how to use the laptop and whatever services are on there, as well as how to use the virtual library services. I think another issue that I could mention too, the, in terms of the funding, we intend embarking on e-learning precisely because we, as you know, that the training programs would in one way or another affect the court performance or court roles. So we are of the view that if we have an e-learning facility, most of the judicial officers will be able to access the services that we render. We also we did a tour of Justice College to look at their printing facility, and Sajay is not even there yet. So we intend that in future to offer an efficient service, we need a fully fledged printing facility, so that it does not affect the pace of training, the pace of producing the material. In terms of the additional training programs for magistrates, and as you can see from the numbers, 21 workshops from July to September, if we had more money, we'd be able to plan well in advance and be able to cover quite a lot of judicial officers. On soft skills, and in August in 2012, there was a judicial retreat where the all levels of judiciary identified needs for soft skills relating to conflict management, communication, presentation, stress management, etc. And we are now working on trying to have a pilot on debriefing for regional court magistrates in Eastern Cape this month. But we would like to have that kind of program to be rolled out to all provinces in the country. As we all know, the gory details that magistrates deal with on a day-to-day basis. So we'd like to also try and provide that support. I think from my side, I've said anything, I've said whatever that, and then the questions will be more than welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. We may take questions so that we don't talk too long without...
Thank you, SG. I've got Mr. Sibanyoni, Mr. Swart, Ms. Pilane Majake, for now. Mr. Sibanyoni.
Thank you, Chairperson. We welcome the presentation, and also just to mention that this presentation shows that the OCJ really it has a vision that we are confident that it realizes what is needed. I want to maybe also specifically commend the Chief Justice. He has been conferred with the doctorate of law, yes, last week on Friday by the University of Northwest for his the work that he did when he was the Judge President of Northwest. We are proud of that. Now, talking about, you know, when I was looking at Dura House, I thought you are occupying more than three floors. I thought the whole building is yours. I didn't realize that you are sharing it with other people. But my question would be, have you considered maybe, I'm looking at the amount that it causes to rent, at the possibility of purchasing your own property rather than leasing the property. Instead of being a rent, being an installment, a bond. And then also, secondly, now that magistrates are also being trained, I think it also needs to be commended. Because, you know, when computers arrived, we were told that some magistrates locked the computers away. And when they were asked, why are you not using the computers? And they were saying, no, they are wasting our time. We are used to do manual. Now we are moving towards a paperless system. Yes, I think it's commended that you are, as the laptops are rolled out, at the same time, magistrates are trained to use them. So that is all. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. And we appreciate that a lot of the work that has been done by the office is interim in setting up structures, and that's a, we look forward to the good work that the office does, and our best wishes and congratulations, as my colleague said, to the Chief Justice. Please pass on our best regards. I mentioned to the chairperson that we normally have an engagement with the judiciary on once a year, and we look forward to that engagement sometime, but time constraints obviously have limited us, but we had that engagement, I think, last year on the constitutional amendment bill. But just with some of the aspects that impact upon the office, clearly one of the major impacts is going to be the takeover of 1494 staff. That's a massive project, and I'd just like to find out how is that progress in the whole transition of court services. It's a 1.3 billion rand transfer, judges, magistrates, salaries, and staff. And obviously one has to go through a whole consultative program with unions and everything. When does it envisage that whole process would be finalized? And then I'd like to ask you, we've had the department before us, we've had the NPA, we've had a number of units accounting to us, and one of the major concerns is the case flow management in the courts and whether we are managing to deal with backlogs. And obviously the Office of the Chief Justice and the Chief Justice himself is going to play a massive role, and we appreciate, again, it's interim, but I'd like you just to give us an indication of the case flow management project that has been initiated at three courts, North and South Gauteng, KZN and the Western Cape. That was last year, end of September. And it was to be rolled out. It seems that it's working very well, where the judges actually take charge of applications from the word go, and they are in charge of it. And it seems to be helping. But when are we expected it to be rolled out to other courts? I don't think we've got any time frames. I think there are five other courts in the project, and we're hoping to see an improvement in case flow management and dealing with the backlog of cases. And of course the issue, we had a concern about court hours as well. It seemed to be the hours that courts are sitting seem to be going down, and we appreciate there's a lot of admin work as well now for judges, but that is obviously something that one would need to address. Obviously the NDP, the National Development Plan, speaks very clearly about accessible justice, quick, speedy justice, and we understand the need for that as a backbone to the economy of the country, dealing with both civil and criminal work. Then I'd also like to just ask with the judicial education side of things, thank you for the report, and we appreciate in the annual reports there's a lot that's also been done there. The concerns were expressed about the number of additional regional court magistrates that have been appointed and that there isn't capacity to train them as well. But is it not correct that the Judicial Education Institute also sits on the Magistrates Commission and that maybe there's a way that the Magistrates Commission sit in there that one can anticipate when those appointments are made? Clearly, there are financial constraints, but I think I'd just like to hear from your side how that aspect, and then whether you are satisfied. We did raise issues, you did answer the PIA issues, the training of PIA. That was a concern that was previously expressed. But trying to understand the linkage between the old justices, the Justice College closed down totally. I know legislatively everything is transferred to the new, in terms of the new act. But all that infrastructure, everything, what has happened to that? Just like an indication of that aspect for our satisfaction. Venture, maybe I just wanted to have a look at the finances, and we know that there was a rollover from the last financial year to the present financial year. And that obviously because it's an interim phase and there was quite a significant rollover. But is it, you've indicated that there is a concern that you've got a lack of capacity going forward. The 2012-2013 financial year, your budget allocation was 126 million, and 86 million of that was spent. The underspend of 40 million was then rolled over. Now, for this year, 2013-14, ending next year, beginning of next year, February, March, you indicate a budget shortfall. Is it 80 million? Just wanted to get clear figures about that. And it seems maybe we can just spend a bit more time understanding those financial figures. Because clearly from April, is it from the next budget year, you will get your full independent and separate budget vote. Is that how I understand it? You'll move away from the department. So there's a lot that we'll need to engage, because if the whole, that 1.3 billion, is that going to be transferred from that budget vote then as well, do you think? Or, I'm just trying to understand that whole process. I appreciate it's all being rolled out gradually. We're not expecting, if you don't have the answers now, it's fine, you know, but we're just trying to understand that process where you'll be taking over a massive chunk of justice, the justice vote, and how that works in the budget allocation. Thank you for the interim chair for those few questions.
Thanks, Chair. Just to thank you for the presentation. Just gives us an idea of what's happening in terms of the office of the, or establishment of the office of the Chief Justice. And quite exciting to see the 17th Amendment Bill and Superior Court Bill in operation. One thing that I think is very important in terms of the systems controller is the quick arrangement or development of guidelines. The operation you're getting into is quite massive, and you'd actually need to have proper guidelines for you to be in the position to deal with day-to-day business without a problem. One thing that I realize is that you have overestimated your projections. You're talking in terms of your office that you will need 150 million And it's because of the fact that you envisage having 500 staff members as compared to the 222 you have at the moment. And this is what actually then starts bringing about a problem, because you've actually overestimated more than 100%, which I think is just too much, and it will then start making things to be difficult in terms of the kind of projections that are viable. I think you need to look into that so that you don't come up with an operation that almost becomes impossible because of the fact that you are really overestimating the figures, and then you have shortfalls. That's the immediate problem that you have because of the overestimation. So just consider that it's important for you to do contingency planning, but it shouldn't be overblown. Very impressive, the idea of having, of modernizing the courts. Technological arrangement around courts is very important. It will help to fast track the judgment, maybe also promote efficient case flow management. Even reporting is very important, because for us as a committee, it will be important in future when you come here to really manage to tell us the type of judgments that you have, and in relation to what you see happening in South African society, can help us to be in the position also as a committee to have a quick sense of what is happening in this area. But that depends on the kind of information you are in the position to pull together for the purpose of analysis, which is something that we've never had up to now with ease. And I do actually support the idea of really modernizing the courts, because we live in a technological era and we really need to move with times. The virtual library also, I think, is part of it. It's very impressive. In terms of slide 14, I think the calculations, I looked at the vertical column and then I did a quick calculation, and the horizontal column, but the horizontal column could actually come to the total. I don't know whether it's me who didn't actually calculate properly. Did you actually do the calculation just only vertically, or you did it horizontally too? Can just advise on that. Yeah, but in general, we are actually looking forward to seeing this office of reading. And one other thing that I'm actually asking myself is, you have Saji, and then I'm saying, okay, there's Saji, where's JSC? Where's SCA? All the offices that are now being taken into the Office of the Chief Justice. And so I think for the purpose of future reporting, that would actually say to us that the representation is proper in terms of what the office represents. Thank you.
Just from my side, SG, three matters. The Chief Justice had identified the need for the judiciary to have a server that is separate from that of the Department of Justice, which I think is an excellent suggestion, because it's all part of this divorce and especially given the problems around the disappearance of court records. Now, can you give us an indication of whether there's been any developments in this regard? Secondly, are you able to give us an indication of the status of curriculum development at SAJE? And then finally, I'm one of those people who have very little faith or confidence in the Department of Public Works. My view is shared by that of the minister. I'm not saying that in your case you're going to have the same experiences as others have had. They may surprise us, and you'll find that they'll deliver as far as you're concerned. If you have difficulties as far as that's concerned, please don't hesitate to inform us. Don't wait until occasions such as this before telling us that if you're having difficulties with DPW. I see the intention is that you're going to build a judicial headquarters. We think that's an excellent suggestion. Currently, the policy in DPW is to lease, and that's hugely problematic as far as we're concerned. It brings with it enormous problems, and I rather like the idea. It's very symbolic, judicial headquarters, wherever it may be, and then everyone understands that that's where it is, and once that is built and properly running, I think people will then get the idea or the sense that our judiciary is truly independent. Just those three from my side. Yes, Jim.
Thanks, Jefferson. Maybe for our ongoing in particular, we're having regular interface with the DPWDG, and we have also in this process included the through the DPW National DG, the province, and exploring, for instance, the Constitution Hill. So Constitution Hill is currently being explored. The DG of the province, Gauteng, is on board and is supportive. And as the chairperson says, we welcome the support. We will push the process with them and see how far it gets. And the Chief Justice is very strong on having a dedicated home for the judiciary, as you said, and moving away from the leasing arrangements. And I will couple with the honourable member's question with regard to a Jura House. We are on the three floors. It's 3105 square meters. We're occupying only three floors. The rest of the building is leased by other entities like Standard Bank, Vodacom, etc. So that's where we are. And maybe to also add to that, we want to move away from the leasing arrangement if we could. It's just that it becomes a long term and it needs dedicated funding. One of the aspects that was explored by the team of my office together with DPW and the province is whether we go the triple P route or we take the capital approach. But we will inform the committee as we move along. We will be having our next session with them in this month, before the end of this month, that we will do so. My other colleagues will take the other questions. With regard to the separate server for the judiciary, Department of Justice is very supportive because, as you will understand, honourable members, our systems are still very dependent on justice. Mm. However, we have between the DOJ and OCJ a dedicated IT committee for the judiciary, which is led by Justice Mlambo, the JP of the Gauteng, which composed of both the magistracy, the judges, and the DOJ to explore this, to make sure that we are able to delink. Coupled with that is the IT infrastructure that we talked about that we'll be implementing in November, so that we lay our own network. So the DOJ is supportive, and they have indicated they brought on the IJS also to assist us, so that we are able to have a separate dedicated domain. So the work of that committee is really dealing with this aspect, so that we are able to have our own server and separate from the DOJ. But in the meantime, we have to be in the transition with them. So as soon as we have the timelines and the plans, we will be able to communicate that to the committee. The issue of the SCA, the JSC, and for future reporting is noted. I forgot, Chairperson, through you to indicate that the Secretariat of the JSC, Mr. Chiluan, unfortunately fell sick last night, so he could not fly out. So we apologize. I apologize for that. And we include them in the process. And from the reporting point of view, the current issues of the JSC, the tribunals, as you'd know, we are supporting the tribunal. And the JSC just had its session in the last week that has passed. And the appointments have been submitted by the Chief Justice to the President, and then that process will unfold very quickly as well. I will give Dr. Moshoeu and Mervin Doralingo to deal with the aspects, and then the finance with regard to the question of the budget, we will deal with that.
Thanks, Chair. I'll start with a question that relates to the capacity to train newly appointed regional court magistrate. The institute is currently relying on both the magistrates and the judges to conduct training. We are working on appointing appointing judicial education judicial educators. There is a process that we have embarked on with the department. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to mention it here, but because it came up, let me mention it. That the draft amendment to the regulations of the Magistrate Court Act to make provision for this. They're still going to be discussed at the council. In December, and then it will probably go through the process that is required. As you know, that judiciary prefers to train by the judiciary. You know, they prefer judiciary-led training, training, and therefore they are very skeptical to involve experts from other fields. The reason being, those very experts might appear before them on whatever matter. I'm not quite sure about the capacity being lacking, because the training that is delivered for both regional and district court, and we do evaluations, and so far the evaluations have given us
infrastructure, not the quality of the infrastructure.
Oh no! Like the SG said, we are occupying those few offices downtown, and we do not have the facilities. So I'm hoping that when we have the intended house for home for the judiciary, there will be provisions for where we can be able to conduct this training and reduce reliance on hotels. as far as sitting on the Magistrate Commission, that's one issue that we have discussed today. With the Chief Justice, we'll be working on, as well as the Secretary of the Commission. We'll be, because as you know now, the Act provides for Justice College to have a seat in the Magistrate Commission, and there's the flow of information, and we would like to strengthen that relationship, so we are working on that. Whether Justice College is closed completely or not, I think the Department of Justice will be more placed to answer that question. We have been working, like I said to them, we did that tour of the facility to see how can we up our own facility and set it up. But as far as whether they are still there or what, I really do not know. The status of curriculum development in SAJ is work in progress. There's several teams that are working on several areas based on their expertise. I can just make an example that currently, there's a team that is working on development of material and curriculum on immigration and human rights, relating to those issues there were problems here in the Western Cape, in the rural or small farms or whatever it is called. And we have reacted to that by trying and making having some training on immigration and human rights. We are hoping that we'll run the pilot before the end of the financial year and roll out to other areas. There's quite a number of other areas that we work on in terms of curriculum development. I may have to also inform the committee that we are working on conducting a needs assessment, what you call judicial education needs assessment survey, to make sure that what we trained on is what is informed by some scientific study. And also that will also strengthen our curriculum and to make sure that we address the needs of our target population. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will be just briefing the committee on the judicial case flow management initiatives. Chair, and committee members will remember in our last report we referred to the three pilot sites. And perhaps the detail is that there's a national caseload committee which is headed by the Deputy President of the Supreme Court of Appeal. And this committee is represented by all the high courts. And we have, with our last discussions now with the Chief Justice, also after the passing of the bill, decided that there needs to be representation of the lower courts onto that particular committee. The lower courts has their own caseload initiatives as we speak. But just to come back to the pilot project, these were obviously aimed at reducing the backlog in the court load. So what has happened, the committee has developed practice directives aimed at empowering, firstly, the registrar to already at the initial stages manage the cases as they come in, so that by the time it gets to the judge, there would have been created various shortcuts to potentially dispose of matters. So we call it phase one, and then phase two is where matters were not finalized and these now go to the judge. So this is where the judge takes control of litigation. And what has happened, we have extended the pilot project until the end of July. What the Chief Justice has also agreed that two further sites be added to the three because of the successes, and we also felt that it was important to look at the different manners, the ways in which we applied case flow management with the focus on the practice directive. I think it's very important to note that with regards to the successes that has been recorded in some of these pilot sites, for example, in the Western Cape High Court, where a person would apply for a trial date 3 years ago, you would have waited for 3 years. Or anything from 3 years, and we have managed to get to the point where if you go to the judge president now and you even need to want a date on very urgent basis for trial, you could get it easily within 3 months. So the Western Cape has done that, and then in the Pietermaritzburg and Durban we have also the similar kind of successes. In Durban you would potentially have waited anything between 18 to 36 months for a trial date. Now you could get your trial date within 15 months. And it is moving at a massive speed as the case flow management is applied. In Pietermaritzburg, for example, the outlay there was 2 to 3 years, and now within 8 months you could get your trial date. These are just some of the successes that's been coming out of the pilot sites. To the extent that, and we would have rolled it now out to further sites, where the Northwest has now come on board. And I think the beautiful thing about the
Western Cape, within 3 months?
Yes, within 3 months, yeah, you could get a trial within 3 years.
Wow.
Cool. Yeah. In fact, the JP says that if parties come to you and they have really got a serious case, he could potentially tell you come within the next few weeks and we'll have your matter in their special circumstances. So yeah, these successes have been recorded, and the Northwest has now come on board as well as part of the pilot, because they are very small site, so we could use the different successes and lessons learned. And then the plan with the rollout is that we will take all these lessons, and Chair, I think that's why our Secretary General emphasized the case flow management as part of the rollout, because we will need funding to continue the success by now if we want to roll it out. We are of the view that as soon as we have been able to roll it out to all the high courts, these principles would be documented and then be applied then even in the lower court. Maybe just on there was one issue that was raised about the court hours. The Chief Justice, Chair, may have heard, has taken an initiative to establish the National Efficiency Enhancement Committee. Here the Chief Justice brings together all the role players in his that affect the courts. And so these have now come together, and we are currently working on an integrated system whereby each one, all the role players, we look at their performance, look at how they impact, and the Chief Justice then has the opportunity to, in this forum, address them and has given them particular guidelines in terms of how, for example, social services, what they need to do so that we don't waste court time and that the court hours could be up. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just to add on that, on the issue of case law management, the honourable members will remember that the two statute gives the Chief Justice the responsibility to establish norms and standards for the function of the court. The Chief Justice is in the process of busy developing those norms and standards because they will have an impact and drive case law as such.
Mm-hmm.
And he will also be going into the provinces so that the work of the NEC can also be decentralized to the provincial level. As you would recall, the JPs are now going to have responsibility of coordinating the judicial functions relating to the magistrate court. So the local case law management forum and system that have been in place, he will be setting up the provincial efficiency enhancement committees there, which integrates your case law management governance in this province to be in line with the NEC that Mr. Doralingo has referred to. So the norms and standards, once they are finalized, they are going to have an impact on the performance and case law management moving forward. With regard to the question relating to the impact of the transfer, the 1.4 staff and the 1.3 below, what I remember, the DOJ as well as the OCJ are on course of this plan. What is currently the position is that the Chief Justice and the Minister are due to meet on an urgent basis, also to make sure that they tie to the issues relating to the transfer issues. But from a planning point of view, what the DOJ and the OCJ has done is to ask DPS, as I've alluded before, to assist us to make sure that we are clear what actually are the functions that will be coming. It is one thing to have the funds and the numbers of staff, but the actual functions that has to come, because there are implications for us, as I've alluded before. We don't have a building. We don't have space. So as you transfer the high court, yes, it's a virtual transfer because no physical high court is going anywhere. But the support that relates to that, that are happening at the regional and national level, are the aspects that we are busy engaging with. There are those functions that will be easy to come over, but there are those functions that will have to be shared in the transition between the OCJ and the DOJ in the transition through service level agreements, and so that whilst we build the capacity, we can do that. So the plan has been developed in terms of a framework, but it is not ready to be shared because we still have to have the necessary engagement with the Chief Justice and the Minister on this issue. But the DPSA have shared with us what the framework they use with regard to the transfer of functions between departments and mandate transfer. That in terms of their guidelines, we have the information with us. So those are the issues. As I've said, the OCJ has got no footprint in the province, so it's one of the things that we have to sort out. But we will await the engagement with the Minister and the Chief Justice in this regard. We'll move to the finance. Sorry.
I'm just trying to understand what the level of staff transfer is going to be. Are we looking at the regional court, or the court managers, you know, and we understand they're not going to be physically moved necessarily, they'll still be running, but I presume it's like your court managers that would be transferred because that's the management, that's the admin of the courts, and one wonders what's going to be left in the Justice Department then, because that is the main work of the Justice Department, is the running of the courts. So we're looking at, we know they've got a massive staff complement. We're looking at 1,595 members that over a period of time will be transferred to your jurisdiction under the Office of the Chief Justice, and that is exceptional because that's your separation, that's what we've envisaged. But to what level is it going to be transferred? Are we looking at clerks of the court right down to that level of capacity? Because that then means that at your level of running of the courts, Office of the Chief Justice is basically going to be taken over a massive amount of staff. I just need to get my thinking around that, if it's correct. And we appreciate it's ongoing discussions. It's not cast in stone. We're not cross-examining or anything. We just understand this is a process, but for us to understand the process as it unfolds and what the implications are. Thank you very much.
Given the years of being used to how it runs, I think our mindsets are finding it difficult to make that.
The wheels of justice
change. Mr. Swart is a lawyer who worked many years in the court, so that's why he's finding it difficult to accept. By the way, those officials are also going to be moved over to you, yes? They are. Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson, and honourable members. The details are being worked out. What we envisage is that in any high court, all the functions that are closer to the functioning of the court, your case management especially, those are the first that, without any doubt, would have to obviously come over. When it comes to those support functions, because we are not fully capacitated as the OCJ, those are the functions that, as discussions go, we'll have to really negotiate is a bad word. We'll have to agree what is feasible with the support services. And those aspects that relate to really the mandate of which are very far from mandate of the judiciary will have to stay. So we are busy with those kind of details, giving into consideration that we are not yet fully capacitated to take over, so we don't want to take over too much that we won't be able to. But, for instance, the work of the registrar is very, very central and critical to the judicial process and the judicial functioning of the courts. So one of the guides, obviously, is Section 8 of the Superior Courts Act, which identifies those judicial functions relating to the court. And our understanding as we move along and engage is that it will be difficult with the lower courts now, because if you look at the Act, it talks about the judicial functions of all courts, and it gives the JPs the coordinating function over the magistrate court. So in that respect, the magistracy, the Chief Justice has asked the magistracy also to begin to look at the Act so that they unpack together with the JPs what does this mean practically, so that as implementation take place, there have been that deliberations and agreement on what it means, management of functions vis-a-vis the coordination of those functions. So practically, the OCJ will look first at those functions that relate to the closer to the judicial, central to court performance and judicial functions, and as we move along, then see how we coordinate that with the JPs and the ministries. The chairperson of the Ministries Commission is going to be having a session with the ministries on the bills, with regard to the real role of the understanding of the role of the JPs over the ministries as envisaged in the Act. And that also feeds into unpacking the issues around the transfer of the High Court. So we are not going to be impractical and want to say the transfer should be wholesale. We have to be very, very realistic with regards to that. But the work of the registrars in the High Courts and the support to the JPs to do judicial administration, which is added, is what we have to be looking at very closely. But as I said, the Minister and the Chief Justice are still to engage very urgently, and then we will share, I think, with the information with the committee as we move along.
We wish you well. Remember the registrar
in South Park? Yes, yes. I remember him very well. Ms. Adams?
Can you indicate to me what is the status of the Judicial Amendment Bill? Administrative Bill, sorry about that. Judicial Administrative Bill or Administration Bill? Let me just check here again. But in any event, is it administration? Yeah. The Chief Justice alluded to that in a speech, I think in April this year, and he indicated it should be finalized towards the end of this year, and since we at the end of October, this is the end of this year. But also in that very same speech, he talked about, and I see it also in your documentation, I think it's on page, slide 16, about the judicially-led court administrative model, okay? Now, I just want to know if the whole plan is that the Judicial Council should actually be leading this, the independence of this office. Can you just, what is the purpose? Can you clarify to me the advisory board? Because that was also what the Chief Justice talked about. There will be an advisory board of members that are drawn from a wide range of disciplines that will advise the Judicial Council. So I just want to understand, because if, like what the lady next to you have indicated earlier, I mean, there's things like litigation afterwards, and if an advisory council, which consists of members of different disciplines, I mean, they can also ultimately end up as litigants in cases, and how do they then give advice to the judicial heads? If you can just clarify that to me.
I think the honourable member is referring to the Judicial Administration Bill.
Yes.
I assume it's the one that refers to the creation of the separate administration for the judiciary, which is the next phase from where we are now. As you would know, now the OCJ is within the executive. The Chief Justice did allude to that, but I would like to say that the model has already been submitted by the Chief Justice to the Minister. So that engagement still has to take place. It has always been, clear that when the OCJ evolves, it will have to get out of the executive. And how it gets that is to be given, it has to take the course of its own legislation that creates it outside the public service. So that is the Judicial Administration Bill that probably the honourable member is referring to. With the Judicial Council vis-a-vis the board and the possibility of litigation, I don't know, the Judicial Council, you would know that now the Chief Justice and the heads of court meet on a regular basis. So the Judicial Council, if you look at the futuristic, is actually what will be formalized into that. The advisory board is to make sure that there's also external input into the administration of justice, not necessarily that they will have to get involved into matters of cases, etc. like that. It's matters of administration and governance. I don't know if it is much clear. The council, if you look at it, it will be composed only of the judicial officers. And the advisory is more expanded so that you include even civil society into matters of judicial administration. That is my understanding. But as I'm saying, this matter is not finalized because it still has to have a lot of engagement between the judiciary and the executive through the Chief Justice and the Minister. But with regard to the bill, it's relating to the purely the creation of the judicial administration outside of the executive. There was another issue that I... Nevin, can you maybe come in on that aspect of the discussion on the finances?
Thank you, Chief. I think the court administration model is, as the Secretary General has pointed out, is really the ultimate governed structure when the judiciary is independent. And when that structure is in place, it is envisaged that it is led by the judiciary and other role players like the politicians, civil society, the legal profession, that they serve in the advisory council. And it is not envisaged that these will be a body that can conflict, really. The advisory council will really give the perspective to the judiciary of everyone other than the judiciary itself. So the decisions that the judiciary would take would be based on what the rest of South Africa says.
having taken that into account. Thank you.
And the finances, Mr.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. If you would allow me, I'm not going to deal with the questions in the order they were asked. But should I continue without the... I'll answer the short ones first. In terms of the 1.3 billion transfer of personnel and functions, what I would just like to add, it will also be a transfer of assets, which we would need to manage in the process. And then a large portion of that 1.3 billion is not reflecting in our budget, because those are, if you go to slide number 11, and those are direct charges against the National Revenue Fund for the salaries of the judges. So that's why it might look like a discrepancy. It's not reflected in our MTF budget, but it's because it's a direct charge. It's not part of the budget program structure. Right. And then in terms of the 150 million for the new head office or new headquarters or whatever we call it, we are estimating for a growth in terms of the new mandate, that eventually we foresee that it might be up to 500 personnel members that should be housed in that head office of ours. And instead of adding on as we go along, if we have a headquarters that is sufficient to cater for a number of years, I think that is the way to go. It's only an estimation. We got the numbers from DPW. If you have 500 members, that is about the cost for headquarters inclusive of everything. Then on slide 14, those numbers do tally. It's only the 3 years from 2014-15 that are reflected in the totals column, because it's the three-year MTF-EF. We only included the 2013-14 figures, the second column, tallying to 123 million. Because that is the current year, just to give an indication to the members on how the budget will grow when the functions are included, when they are transferred. So the 1.79 million at the right bottom end of the last column is only for the 3 years, 2014-15 to 17.
I was just actually looking at the horizontal line. That horizontal line does tally, the vertical one. But what I said is that the horizontal one, when I'm actually making a calculation here, right at the bottom, it didn't tally. But naturally, it's actually saying that because it's about the same figures, all must tally. It's okay if...
Okay, I'll check that for you.
Right.
I'll check that for you. Okay, and then in terms of the question pertaining to the 2012-13 budget, the 40 million that was rolled over in the justice budget, it wasn't rolled over. What has happened is there was 126 million allocated in the previous financial year, and the new budget allocated as a sub-program to the OCJ is 123 million. So the 40 million that wasn't spent in the previous year wasn't rolled over to the OCJ budget in the sub-program. That being said, it might also seem like a contradiction that we are currently underspending, but we've explained in slide number... the under-expenditure, let me just get to that slide. The current under expenditure is explained, but what we will do is there's also a shortfall on slide number 19. We discuss the current budget year's shortfalls. So what we contemplate to do is where the funds are available and we see there are going to be under expenditures, we will prioritize the shortfalls and transfer funds to cover the current budget shortfalls. In this financial year. Obviously, we will not be able to cover the 66.4 million in totality, but we'll reprioritize and see which ones of those we can fund out of the current baselines.
All right.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Just to add to what the CFO just said, we monitor the budget
on a regular basis so that we are able to also not reflect as if we have shortfalls where the funds are still available. But I think it is important to know that it is difficult because when the OCJ was first funded, it was purely inflation-based, based on what was given from the beginning. And it's quite understandable because there were many things which were uncertain at that time. So we are in the process of trying to also move towards really certainty of what actually the real resources required for the OCJ to function optimally is. So we are not there yet, but we are working on that so that we are able to. But the other also complicating factor is that other mandates keep on coming. So as you try to get it right, then there's another mandate coming, then it takes you backwards. So, but we do our best to make sure that we don't over, and I take the Honorable Member's guidance, we don't overestimate, but we are in a learning curve to make sure that we certainly know what is it that we need for us to be functional moving forward, and we take the advice then.
Chairperson, just to answer on the numbers, if you go to slide number 14, the horizontal, the bottom horizontal, you should exclude the 123 million from the total, because that is not part of the three-year MTEF budget. If you look at the vertical, the last column, the total vertical, it also excludes the 2013-14 figures. We just put that in there to give you an indication of what the growth would be against the current financial year. So if you look at the totals, you should use only 2014-15 on the vertical, as well as from the horizontal you start counting there, and then the numbers tally.
Okay, I get it now. It is at the table itself doesn't say exclude.
I'm not sure if we covered everything, Chairperson. I'll be guided by you, sir.
No, I think you have. I think you have.
Can I just ask something?
Yes, Ms. Bilalimichek.
About the NEEC, National Efficiency Enhancement Policy. When I was reading the document, it's represented by President FDA, Judges President, Regional Court, President, plus SAPS, National Commissioner. But somehow, when you're talking about the social development, social development, so have it been excluded? Is this part of the NEEC? Because in the document, it's not actually included.
I think Mervyn can add to that, but Honourable Member, the NEEC is all the administrative heads of the departments that are crucial with regard to the functioning of the corps. Yes, it will include social development. Yes, because there's probation work, there's issues of child witness issues which have to be given attention, and health to a certain extent also is part of that. The police, correctional services, DPW is also involved because there's issues of court facilities. So it really includes a whole range of all the stakeholders that are very critical for the functioning of the corps. Yes, thank you.
Okay. I just want to, maybe it's an issue that I need to raise for the department, and that is what is happening to the present infrastructure of the Justice College. The Dr. Mashwe said that that you are looking, you're renting hotels and things like that, and you have no knowledge of what's happened with the Justice College because it's under the department. But it just seems to me that there must be that infrastructure that is there at the moment, and what is, and maybe we just need to engage with the department as to what is happening with that infrastructure. Is it being used for courts now or something like that? And what the interim relationship moving from the Justice College to your new to the new institute is concerned. And that's the one issue. And the second issue relates to the comment that was made about looking for judicial officers to lecture. Are there not existing judicial officers from Justice College that one could call on as well? I know there's been a lot of discussions about that, and there's a lot, but is that, are you also fishing in that pool as well? Just to try to understand that process as well, without, it's an independent process, but just if you could just assist us in understanding that, that process as well.
Thank you. Honourable members, as far as the subject is concerned, in terms of training, we place more emphasis on practical training. We would like the magistrates, after they have attended whatever session, they should be able to, that should be able to inform the operations. And I'm saying this against the background that the Justice College lecturers that were at the facility for quite a number of years without being performing any bench-related duties. And a decision was taken that they should be go back to the bench. We are, Sajay has conducted train-the-trainer courses to upskill those magistrates who are willing to contribute towards training and who are also experienced. We are when they are available, the Justice College lecturers to assist. But I think the idea here is to let them go back into the system and get that practical experience, and then with the practical experience coupled with the teaching experience, I think that will be more, to add value in terms of training. Thank you.
Looks like we've covered everything. Mr. Sibelian?
Yes, always. Chapter 3.
Okay.
Most of that are we early still, so
yeah.
I've also got a small issue.
All right. Okay.
Chapter 3, just to add on your words to say, it would be advisable that we've got a distinct office of the Chief Justice. I will tell you my experience. I got lost when I attended the Sanchez meeting on second occasion. As a member of the JSC, Judicial Service Commission, I attended once when I was taken by shuttle on the second occasion from the airport. I said, I know where the place, Fox Street. We passed it. I had to phone J.P. Skosana to say, give us direction, where is the office of the Chief Justice? And the driver, he didn't know it. He wanted to take me to Constitution Hill. I said, no, I know it's not there. And then we were asking people around as we were driving along Fox Street. They said, no, we don't know. And then I think this institution is an institution which needs to be distinct there. The office of the chief of the Chief Justice. That's all I want to say. I'm sitting on the side chain, having been requested by the JSC to have a representative on side chain. Thank you, Chief.
You've just also with the setting up of the new unit with your new budget. And at the moment, you operate as a sub-program of the department, and you liaise with the Auditor General of that level. But we really urge you, because from next year on, you're going to be reporting to us as an independent unit, that you have that ongoing discussions with the AG, setting your targets, very important, so that the AG doesn't qualify your audits on achievement of targets. I think it would be incumbent upon the chief. It wouldn't be a poor reflection on him if there were any qualified audits. So I just want to urge you to strike from the go as CFO. You've got internal audits. You've got that already. But at the moment, it's only as a sub-program. Once you start operating, have regular discussions with the AG so that you are a shining example. And we had Lawsa, Legal Aid South Africa, that is a shining example of 8 years of clean audits. It's phenomenal, and it can be done, but it would be wonderful, as opposed to other units that come that
for example, the SIU that's doing incredibly good work, but they've got qualified audits. Now, they're supposed to uphold the law, and they're already getting qualified audits. So I just encourage you to from our side, to engage as much as possible on that aspect, which would avoid you having to appear before us, and then we ask questions which are a reflection on the Chief Justice, you know. So it's just, I hope you don't mind that, Chair, but it's, I think it's something that we need to encourage you. It's an encouragement.
Yes. First, Ms. Shopistole, and then Ms. Pilani Majak.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. And I feel very excited about this new baby that is born. And I just want to add to what Mr. Swart has said to the Chief Financial Officer, that's my pet subject, that it will be advisable for you to make sure that you have got an audit committee. And that audit committee must be independent if you want it to help us. Because I believe any institution, it doesn't matter whether it's the office of the Chief Justice or the other shop, is as good as its finances. Once your finances are well looked after, it will be possible for you to do what you have set yourself to do. But once the finances are not well looked after, you may not reach where you want to reach. So I think it's very important to see to it that you've got an internal audit structure that is functional. And listen to it, because many institutions do have an internal audit structure, but they don't take the recommendations very seriously. You should actually, you know, I view the internal audit structure as, you know, your auntie who is there for you. And you should actually listen to it, because if you listen to it sufficiently and give it enough space, you may find that your relationship with the Auditor General becomes very smooth. Because what the Auditor General will not miss to report on is, he will also check the report of the internal auditor. Did you listen to the recommendations? And if you didn't, he is definitely going to make a note of that.
It's along the same line that I wanted to actually make an input. And earlier I've actually asked about the system controller. I don't think I've got the answer for that. Were they going to have guidelines? Because it's very important for day-to-day operations to have proper guidelines that are aligned to all forms of legislation that are going to help to govern the office, from Employment Equity Act to Public Finance and Management Act. All of that is going to actually help PSG to be in the position as an accounting officer now to run that office. About HR matters, conditions of employment, all of that. It's very, very important in terms of running the office. And of course, just to add on what Honorable Chope has just indicated, that internal controls are very important. Once you've got, when you work with human beings, you've got to have guidelines. Otherwise, you're going to be in the position to run something that is efficient, or it can end up being a mess. But once there are guidelines, and whatever question is asked or whatever advice you are giving is based on agreed upon guidelines, whether you call them guidelines, whether you call them enabling regulations, it's something that can actually help you to run the operations efficiently. Because moreover, as an accounting officer, you will always have what we call the executive. And as an accounting officer, you have to be in the position also to say no to the executive. And without any form of policies, you're not going to be in the position to do that successfully. Thank you, Chair.
Jefferson, I think I take the advice of the honourable members with regard to that, especially the system controller internal audit. We are due to fill the internal auditor position in the current month, and the audit committee we will look at that. We really take advice, also mindful that it will be one thing if the administration of the judiciary find itself is in such an untenable position. We really take that very seriously as executive committee of the OCG. We look at those issues that can really put us in that light. But we welcome the advice, and we'll make sure that we really focus on that as part of our governance. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. It looks like we've come to the end of the day as far as the Office of the Chief Justice. But as usual, we are very pleased when you appear before us. We're quite excited by the developments taking place, and we hope to get to see them reach fruition. You can count on our support. We'll do what is necessary, honourable members, in terms of the funding that the OCJ has requested. Via their presentation today, that will form part of our BRRR report, and so SG, from our side, that is the assurance we can give you. Unfortunately, our relationship with the Treasury is not as good as yours is. So when we go to them, the first question they ask us is, well, if you want 64 million, where's it coming from? So we've got to take it away from someone else. But that's our problem. We don't want you to worry about that. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, honourable members, for your guidance and for your support.
Thank you.
We'll keep in touch. Thanks.
What, in this wind?
Our boss is a slave driver.
We know. Honourable members, can we have a 10-15 minute break?
Yeah.
Please.
Alright.
Well, I need to address you and the individual who is the advisors of the tagging office. Honourable members, we have before us Ms. Ngema, the financial legal advisor. As you know, we had approved the judicial register amendment law some time back. And out of the blue, we were informed that the clause was in the bill that fall within the category of
in order for the bulk of the clauses to be debated on Tuesday as Section 75, because the problem with Section 76 is that the NCOP must be taken to new provinces. And that's a lengthy process, and it's very unlikely that that will happen before the elections next year. And therefore, the bill, the whole bill of
for me, as indicated in the opinion, the crucial clauses that really create some challenges and problems that would say there would be problematic moving forward in terms of the processes would be clause 39, as indicated. Clause 39 basically deals with the delegation by the national government to the provincial government of the accreditation powers for the welfare organizations. So that clause specifically speaks to whether the provinces will have the capacity in terms of infrastructure and other resources to deal with that accreditation, as well as the autonomy of the provinces. So that is why that main clause is the one that we found was crucial, and basically the one that we can stand by to say, just for that clause, then it falls to be a 76 bill, as well as, because what it deals with, it's welfare, as well as the first question that I've pointed out, the autonomy and capacity of the provinces. Then the other one, which also, but we can't be swayed on that one, but it's also another one, is clause 17. Which deals with the trust account for legal practitioners. There, I think our background understanding was that if you look at that clause, you can either argue it as dealing with welfare, you can argue it as dealing with either trade or consumer protection, which are the issues that fall within Schedule 4. And so the two tests that we've used in order to look properly at what tagging or what appropriate tagging of each bill would be are those two crucial things. One, is it an issue that affects the provinces? Which, as I said, for clause 39, if you look at that one closely, you can argue such. And then the second one is whether does it deal with an issue that falls within a Schedule 4. And for clause 17, as I said, one can argue that it deals with consumer protection when you look at the intention intended for such provision to prohibit the legal practitioner continuing to use the trust account. So on those two, for us, those were the two crucial ones, which is clause 39 and clause 17. The other ones, of course, it's likely that they can stand in between. One can argue the other way and the other can argue the other way. It would only depend on the conclusion argument as to which one is taken. But clause 39 and perhaps 17 in a slight way as well are the two that need consideration. And well, with just those two then either taken out or dealt with somehow, then the bill can be a 75. Thank you, Jefferson.
Jay, I share your concerns and I appreciate the fact that you're going to write a letter. Just as a matter of principle, my concern is that this bill was presented early in 2013 this year, and we now sit in a day or two before the debate on it.
Now, as I understand the legal opinion, which I'm grateful for, it is when there is differing views on the tagging process between the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor and the Department that we must prepare and attach a legal opinion. I'd like to ask, when did these differing views come to the fore? Surely it can't be now. Was it not much earlier in the year? And why are we now faced with a situation that literally 3 days before the debate that we have to take this far-reaching decision to remove clauses that we don't have the department yet to brief us as to what the implications of that are. Now, I fully support us because the approach, in as much as we need to pass the rest of the legislation, the all those matters are important. But of these two clauses, I'm not sure whether there's a constitutional court judgment that's waiting for us to pass that before. But that having been said, I accept the legal opinion that those two clauses are of such a nature that they relate to this bill being tagged as Section 76. What I'm not sure about is you spoke about six others as well. So how are we going to approach this? So I'd firstly like to know why we're only getting this parliamentary legal opinion so late. And then secondly, how many exact clauses do we have to remove? Clause 39 you spoke about, and clause 17, and then you also mentioned, Chair, that there are six others.
Four
others. Are they in paragraph 12?
Paragraph 12.
But Chair, we need to know what those clauses say. You know, we need to know.
I can tell you what they say.
And whether there are time limits from the Constitution, because a lot of those amendments related to constitutional court judgments where there was a time limit. But I agree with your approach, Chair, and I support you, that we don't want to run the risk of inserting clauses if we want to push the balance of the judicial matters bill through, that the tagging might be incorrect at a later stage, particularly if there are constitutional court matters, their judgments have been given where the matter's been referred back to Parliament. I seem to remember that was the case, and that there might be further litigation and the tagging issue might become relevant. So I appreciate your belts and braces approach, but maybe we can just go through those clauses quickly and hear what they're about. But I'd like to hear about why this opinion is only at this stage.
Thank you,
Jefferson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. From the internal processes that we conduct within the Legal Services Office, as you can see, firstly, maybe I should apologize that the opinion that was sent through is the one that I just printed this morning when Mr. Bonani advised me that the committee wants to speak on this. But as you can see on the date is 23 May 2013 when we prepared. This is actually an attachment to the tagging legal opinion that we attached as to indicating to the joint tagging mechanism that we are of the view that should be a Section 76 opinion, should be a Section 76 bill. So that was the time when we released this opinion to the joint tagging mechanism, and also under the understanding that once we sent an opinion to the JTM, either upon referral of the bill to the committee or at some point in the processes of the committee, the same gets to be conveyed to the committee. But I understand there was a break somewhere in communication. I think we also have in our office to look into that and find perhaps a better mechanism to communicate. But I think I must also add further that through some discussions and trying to follow protocol, I did try to communicate a request of the same to either say, is it possible to have a discussion with the chairperson through the committee management here, or either to have a discussion of this opinion with the whole committee as such, but unfortunately that didn't seem to materialize in any way. So in that first answer, the opinion or the attachment to the tagging opinion was prepared already in May 2018.
I didn't see that date, my apologies, Chair.
But it's
supposed to be a breach of something along the line, and it's not necessarily your fault.
No, it's not necessarily Ms. Ngema's fault, and you know, that isn't the issue at all. I'm not looking to apportion any blame to anybody. But clearly the process needs to be re-looked at, firstly. I think together with the decision of the JT and the joint tagging mechanism, we need to also be provided with a copy of the opinion by the parliamentary legal advisor. I see nothing wrong with that. It's apparently not meant for us as a portfolio committee or us as individual members. But I can't see anything wrong with this being provided to the portfolio committee together with a formal decision of the JT of the joint tagging mechanism. Then we have an understanding of how they reached their decision.
The joint tagging mechanism then differed from her legal opinion. Is that correct? Because it was tagged as a 75 bill, otherwise we wouldn't be sitting with the problem we faced.
Well, that is the breakdown.
You gave an opinion that there were clauses in this bill that should make it a 76 bill, and it wasn't adhered to, and it's a very compelling argument you present here. But obviously, the joint tagging mechanism, we get the bill and it's a 75 bill.
Yeah.
So we weren't aware of that at all, and that places us in a dilemma now.
Yeah.
But it's not your fault, Mr. Gilman, really. I didn't want to cast any aspersions on you.
Was that it?
Chairperson, I just want to know, is the debate still going on Tuesday? And, I mean, it's one thing for us to get other legal opinions, but today is Friday, we're not meeting on Monday. If we meet on Tuesday, what's going to be the purpose of it if the debate is in the afternoon?
No. We still have time today, and that's why my chief would call both Mr. Sibanuni and I to get clarity on Tuesday's debate, proposed debate. Essentially to ask us, do we still proceed?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this morning, my understanding of the bill was that it only referred to Clause 39, which is a delegation of powers by the Minister of Social Development to her MECs. Now, that makes sense. I don't think anyone can argue with that. So clearly, in my explanation to my chief whip, it's only Clause 39, and all we do is excise that clause, either by formally rejecting it or by adopting a resolution in this committee, that we split the bill, remove Clause 39, put it in a separate bill, and proceed with the rest of the bill as it is.
But what about the other clauses in paragraph 12, 36, 42, 43, and 46? Because if we talk about splitting 39 and 17, I suppose, then we might just as well do it with the other clauses, because paragraph 12 talks about that those ones are in similar vein. The concern that I just have is I don't know how that legal opinion is drafted and how compelling that one would be. But we would obviously need time. If we need time for today to discuss it, well, then it's fine. But that is just my concern about Tuesday and the debate, and whether we can't, is there a possibility of us following the proper procedure and getting the clauses be removed from that bill and then set the debate for another time? Is it possible, and not specifically then for Tuesday?
Well, I think the other matter which I raised with Mr. Romano this morning was for him to engage with Parliament's legal advisers to ascertain whether, if we do that today, are we acting procedurally correct? That's the main thing that bothers me. So, you know, even if we proceed to remove the two clauses referred to, 17 and 39, as well as the other clauses referred to in paragraph 12, my main concern was now, yes, procedurally, will we be challenged, and are we on solid ground? Because that's the other matter that is really bothering me. Yeah. First, Ms. Shopestone, Pilane Majake, and then Mr. Swart. I'll go through the clauses
and what they provide just now, Mr. Swan, because that was your question.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I was just thinking that maybe the Chairperson and our whip may need to have another discussion with the Chief Whip so that we get this debate on another day, not tomorrow. Because I think we need to do our thing. We must give ourselves just a few more days, because you know, if we we just rush through this thing today, and the chief we've had an understanding that it's only 1 o'clock, we may have challenges.
I think in the same vein, Chair, I'm thinking that Tuesday is not possible. You know, taking into consideration the level of discussion now, we're not ready. There's a lot that still needs to be clarified. If we're going to go for Tuesday, we'll be frustrating ourselves. It's not going to be possible. What actually is frustrating is realization that, you know, it's as if communication is not wrong. We can't work on something, and then when you're supposed to deliver the results, then you get all of these administrative hiccups, which would actually also mean that as a committee we need to take this into cognizance and decide as to how we can avoid something like this moving on into the future. I'm just thinking maybe when we discuss bills, we must write on top that this one is going to be section 76 or 75 or 4. Or 7, so that as we proceed, whoever is looking at the bill knows it's a section 76 across the board. So that by the time we finish with it, then we don't start discussing as to what section it belongs to. Well, it's just my way of thinking, how can we avoid this moving forward? Because this is truly a waste of time and a frustration in terms of our deliverables.
I support the views that we might not be ready for Tuesday, but at the same time, we would like to pass this bill as quickly as possible. So let's take our time. Let you maybe we mandate you to have the discussions that you need to have with the chief whip, and maybe we can just have a research page on what are these clauses, 36, 42, 43, 46. What are the implications of the removal on them?
No.
It's purely what they relate to and what are the implications of their removal.
Okay.
Because if there is risk, that then we should excise those. But I think we need to just be careful. And then it saves you orally now going through each one of them now, because I don't have my bill with me.
No, that's what worries me.
Yeah. You know. And we can... But as long as you can emphasize to the chief that we want it, we want the bill finalized. When are there other days available?
Yes.
There are plenary days available.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to get that clarity. So I think I agree with my colleagues that we need to take a bit of time to do with this. Judicial matters bills, by their very nature, are very important for the whole criminal justice sector, civil justice sector, and often are subject to litigation at a later stage.
All right. You'll do that, please, for us, Julian.
Yeah, sure, Chair. I'll have to get legal opinion from Ms. Gale, but she does.
Okay. The other four deal with the Child Justice Act. Okay. And Clause 36, for example, deals with child welfare matters. Okay, and that's a provincial competence. Clause 42, 43, and 46. Now, I don't know. 42 and 43 deals with sentencing of children
in
trouble with the law.
That's a constitutional court decision, Major.
Okay.
I remember. And you see, that is my concern. If there is a constitutional court decision that this is a response to, what is the time limit you know, but we are caught between a rock and a hard place, because if the opinion is correct that they are Section 76, then they must be excised. There's, we're not going to be able to do that process in any case.
Yeah.
So rather we might have to sacrifice those issues to for the broader issue of the rest of the bill going through. So Pierre, I don't want to, we
no.
don't need a lengthy
no,
opinion,
no,
we just need to know what the implications
page.
Are.
Okay.
No, just
but
a
page. Is it linked to Constitutional Court?
Yeah.
And
what the time period is in that,
sure.
What the time period is to pass that.
But
yeah.
46, very briefly, deals with evaluation of persons competent to conduct the evaluation of criminal capacity of a child. Now, there, you know, I'm really in the legal expert's hands. I don't know how that constitutes a section or a provincial competence. I don't see it, but I mean, I could be wrong.
I think the legal opinion, a lot of those are grey areas.
Very grey areas.
Specify, and sometimes it's to err on the side of
caution.
Caution,
yeah. So, okay. Then that's it then. I will. I had promised the chief whip this morning, Mr. Simonioni will confirm that I will see him round about lunchtime and give him our response.
No, that is
Yes, as soon as, please, Julie.
Okay.
As
like
soon as.
Monday afternoon, like. You don't have to work
out the weekend. Okay,
we're
having our own.
No, it's fine, it's fine.
You just have it next week.
Next week, where's Mr. Romano? Where did he go to? I wanted him to tell us what the agenda is for next week. It's legislation, honorable members.
Legal practice bill.
Legal practice bill, definitely. And there's also, I'm not sure, Gillian, whether Christine will be ready with the BRRR report. But as a related matter is that Mr. Swart will have to leave Wednesday.
And I'll be popping in
for that medium-term expenditure framework budget. He delivers the speech on Wednesday, doesn't he?
Wednesday.
The 25th.
Yeah. But that's the process. I will move between the two committees.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it'll be legislation next week. Okay. If the BRRR report is ready, then you want to read it carefully and make sure you're satisfied with it. So that'll take a while. So we'll be dealing with legislation. Okay. Yes, Ms. Again.
Thank you, Jefferson. If I may perhaps just speak to that issue of the procedure you raised in terms of whether splitting or exciting the provisions that are creating the challenges. From just looking at the rules, I think there are two distinct things for either you go for splitting the bill or whether you go with the option of taking out what will change the bill. If we take out, say for example, we take out clause 39 and then say for argument's sake that makes the bill in order to take it as a 75, then that is an easy process because all that is required there is the reclassification of the bill by the JTM, which I'm sure can be then a quicker process, but then they can change. And I must add as well that the JTM approved the taking of this bill to 76. So it would just be the reclassification from 76 to 75. But if it is the splitting, to say we take out those that make the bill a 76 and we leave those that make it a 75, then that way there will be two processes that are necessary. It will be the request and approval from the House to say that the splitting of the bill can happen, as well then as the reclassification from the JTM.
All right. You see, those are things I need to explain to my chief. And clearly then, in light of what we've just heard, Tuesday's out of the question. I don't know when the JTM will take its decision, Jenny. Hopefully it's quick and perhaps sometime today. But I tend to agree with everyone that we should just hold back on Tuesday's debate. hope you agree with me, under the circumstances, and allow the JTM to take its decision, okay? I think what Ms. Ngema will need from us is whether we are going to excise all six clauses, all right, because that's going to mean she will report to the JTM accordingly, or just the two, 17 and 39. Should we wait for...
On Tuesday night we can take the degree of urgency, but at least we can then get short note from
Julian on... All right. So, Ms. Ngema, you have to wait, right? I don't know what my chief whip is going to say. You're going to want to kill me, but it's unavoidable.
So, is that with you, Chair?
No.
Maybe.
You could say I might be small, but can't.
No. Right. No. They wanted to know what's happening next week. That's into the legislation. Tell us, confirm that?
No, we have to make the budget, so we have to talk to Tuesday.
You're assuming it'll be ready on Tuesday?
It has to be.
It has to be. You heard that, Julian. Please tell Christine, BRRR report has to be ready on Tuesday. And will the members get it in time to read it and analyze it?
Don't spend a lot of time. This, then, I mean, they're going to be doing that as well then.
Yes.
So this opinion must be very brief. Just on the implications of taking on, And we probably,
Yes, what is it? Simple as I initially thought it was. It involves a lot more. Mr. Castle, the NIH secretary, proposes that we approve the bill and then have the House refer it back to us.
It's a
poor
objection on us.
Very poor.
And it's not our fault.
No, it's not.
So the House will say, what's justice? Come on, yeah.
Exactly. All right. So yes, Tuesday we'll deal with the BRRR and what else? Sexual offences, are they coming? And we need legal practice bullets. What do you mean after? We'll clean it. Okay, Wednesday we deal with it. So, honourable members, Tuesday's program will be the BRRR report, by which time you will have received Julian's analysis of these clauses that we want to remove.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully you will have read the BRRR report so that we can engage on it on Tuesday. Sexual offences as well on Tuesday. Ms. Ngema, I need you to advise me on this Rule 249(3)(e) and the consultation with the JTM. Okay. And then Wednesday we'll deal with the legal practice board. Alright? I think that's it. Oh yes, when? Wednesday. Let's do it Wednesday. Just needs a quorum.
The only thing that
you
I've got
to achieve
is on Wednesday is the lockup. Sure. So if you've got any other work to do in the morning, it would be great. But I want to come in there, I can't come out.
So no, we understand.
Thank you.
I want to come the intelligence.
We understand that this is short as time.
Why do you want to do
get locked away. You don't know good lawyer.
Thank you.
Thank you.